Hi, this is Kate from ADHDKidsCanThrive.com, and today I have a very special guest. Her name is Chrissy Pozitek, and she's the author of three books titled The Parallel Process, Brave Parenting, and Brave Teaching. Chrissy also offers courses in parent coaching, digital courses, and a group parent coaching subscription. She has her master's in social work and can be found at parallel-process.com. Today, Chrissy and I are going to focus on our discussion around her book, The Parallel Process, and how it relates to parenting kids who struggle with ADHD and more. I think it's one of the best parent education books to add to your arsenal when raising a child who struggles with emotional regulation. I came across this book about 10 years ago when I was on my own journey of parent education. My child was young and wasn't headed off to a treatment program, but I really enjoyed the book and got a lot out of it personally. It provides a roadmap and language for a parent who is trying to figure out how to parent a child who struggles. It's really time well spent if you read this book. So welcome, Chrissy. I'm glad you're here. Okay, so let's get started with kind of what are the key word that you use in the book is balanced parenting. So let's start with what is balanced parenting and why is that important?
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing your how you received the book. I love hearing how parents, take the book in, and that's really cool to hear your perspective. Yeah. So I think balanced parenting is really the flip side of balanced parenting is what I would call enmeshed parenting. So maybe we should start with that. Enmeshed parenting is where I think a lot of parents get stuck. And especially, you know, we can put ADHD in that category, because if you think about it, a child with ADHD has issues with executive functioning, right? They have self-regulation, they have issues with organization, they have issues with being overstimulated, they have issues with reading cues, right? So there's sort of all this sort of chaos. And so a parent may come in and manage that chaos, right? And become their child's executive functioning, become their child's external emotional regulator, and become their child's, you know, organizational system. And do you see how there's this merging and this enmeshment where the parent's starting to take on really things that I would say are in the child's domain? And parents do this, and you're right, my book isn't specific about ADHD, but parents do this with any kind of struggle because they feel like they have to get their child from A to B, right? They solve, right? They have to sort of fix and solve, anything, any problem or obstacle like in their child's path. And in doing that, it can, you know, unfortunately create dependencies, right? Where the child becomes sort of codependent on mom or checked out or apathetic, you know, and we see this a lot with ADHD.
Yes.
And issues where kids sort of check out. It was funny, as I was thinking about this talk, an image came in my mind when I was a younger mom, when my kids were younger. I remember being at a friend's house and her son had pretty bad ADHD and he was laying on the floor playing his like Game Boy, and she like was putting on his shoes and tying his shoes for him. So he was literally another reality. And she was just like, there was no need to put the video game down and put your shoes on, right? There was no asking kids to learn the skills. It was the parent just sort of, this is the easiest way, right, to get the child through.
Right.
And I think that, you know, you can use that metaphor for anything, right? It doesn't have to just be a 4-year-old putting their shoes on or whatever, however old he was. It could be, 24-year-old, you know, who doesn't know how to do something, you know, with their new job or whatever it is. And so I think that these enmeshed patterns parents get into. And yes, so the balanced parenting is finding this way where parents can have what I call these healthy emotional boundaries. You know, sometimes I call it healthy separation, where they're leaning in and attuned to their child, right? And attuned to the feelings, because again, typically there's a lot of kids getting stuck today are very sensitive, right? They're feelers, they're overstimulated. Right. And so parents need to lean in and acknowledge and validate the child's feeling, But then we need to then hold the behavior boundary. So it's the combination of attuning to their emotion and the boundary around their behavior that creates a safe container for kids to learn to self-regulate, right? And this is work, you guys. It's a skill. It's a new language. It's a new script, right? It's a new way to interact with your child. And so, you know, don't beat yourself up if you can't get it overnight. But I guess what I'm trying to show parents is there is a sort of roadmap for parenting in a way where you're promoting your child's skill development rather than staying in these enmeshed patterns and these codependent patterns where kids can kind of continue to check out and be apathetic.
Right. And so I think the biggest challenge is as a parent, when you look at typical kids, those boundaries and that container is going to be a little bit different. And if you are raising a child who struggles, it's going to seem a heck of a lot easier, right, than what's going on in your own home. So how does a parent deal with, and maybe parents are parenting just one child who has ADHD and another parent is very and the other child's very typical. Like, how does a parent figure out how to create those boundaries and being in tune with them emotionally, but it's going to be different than maybe what's going on with other kids around?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I guess I would say that a lot of parents already are parenting different. Like, let's face it. Say you have a child that's already self-organized. You have a child that's a self-starter. Right. You're going to be more hands-off naturally with that child than with the ADD. So parents are already parenting differently. So if I'm suggesting something, they might be like, you know, well, how does that work with ADD? And it's like, well, parents are already, you know, over-parenting, accommodating this child, perhaps on eggshells so the child doesn't get upset, which they may not be doing for the child that is, say, whatever, on a more normal, for lack of a better word, trajectory.
Right.
So, I think you always just have to parent the child in front of you. You know, that's really one of my sayings, right? What does the child in front of you need? Maybe if you have a child who's a self-starter, maybe they need some freedom and independence. They still have tech boundaries or curfew or whatever the rules are for car privileges, right? They're still that child. But the child with ADHD, ADD or ADHD, the child in front of you there may need a lot of emotional support. That doesn't mean emotional rescuing, where we fix everything for them. It just means presence, emotional presence, where we can listen and validate and say, that is overwhelming. Wow, that is really stressful. Wow, I can see that that might frustrate you when you don't know your math homework. You know, how are you feeling? You know, how do you want to navigate this? Can you show me? So we're curious, we're leaning in. This helps kids regulate when they feel heard, when they feel validated. Right. Versus us just jumping in and doing it for them or solving it for them or minimizing it. So we first have to really lean in with acceptance and validation of the child's emotion. And then we have to sit with the discomfort of navigating it. You know, okay, well, you know, you can't have your tech time, you know, till this homework's done. So I'm going to, you know, let you navigate. How do you want to proceed with the math? We have to ask kids to be problem solvers, not just problem solving their math homework, but problem solving life.
Right.
Right. Just jump in, fix, navigate, solve. And we need to let them have what I call safe struggle. I mean, is not knowing your math homework safe struggle? I think it is. Right. So we have to identify what's safe, what's unsafe, right? If your child didn't come home from school, okay, that's unsafe. We have to find them, right? We're not just going to sit on our hands, right? But if your child's in your home and doesn't know, like, that's safe struggle. So we can let them be with that discomfort and, you know, say, you know, until when you finish, you can have your tech time. And, you know, you can still be present and you can be there, but it doesn't mean we jump in and merge and do that enmeshment. So I think, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I do think we need to help the child in front of you, right? We do.
Right.
We have to alter it's just a fact, I think.
Yes. How do you put the boundaries around it? So setting boundaries and determining what those boundaries are. So if we talk about the math homework, right? Let's say they're younger and they haven't learned how to manage their frustration with getting the math homework done. How do you help? There's going to be a couple meltdowns probably, right? As you teach them how to regulate their emotions with math, for example, it could be any class, right? But how does a parent respond? Like, how do you manage the meltdowns that are going to happen as you're starting to push your child into learning how to regulate themselves around uncomfortable things, such as doing math homework? Like, well, how do you work on your, it's like learning how to, they got to learn how to respond to that in a more manageable way. And I think for parents too, it's learning how their response, which is why I love this book, right? It's, you're looking at, you have to look at your, how your kid's going to respond, but you also have to manage how you're going to respond to that meltdown about math. Right. And that's the growth that the parent and the child kind of have at the same time.
Absolutely. So, you know, just to get more specific, like there's four like principles that I talk about. And so I think these are all important for a parent to keep in mind. So number one, parents need to be in what I call their parental authority, right? Where they're creating safety in the home and they're holding safe boundaries. So I think, you know, parental authority doesn't mean you're, a tyrant or something.
Right.
It means you're creating safety, right? So it's sort of like thinking about that teacher who has sort of authority over their classroom, and there's sort of a rules and order and routine, and then there's a classroom where the kids are in charge and it's chaos, right? Which a lot of Americans are, where the kids are in charge. So when you have parental authority, the parent's setting the tone, the parent's setting the container, the parent's setting the expectations, like we're doing homework time, right? And after that, you can have tech time or something along those lines. So the staying in their authority. Number two, there's this attunement. The parent is leaning in and valuing and validating and accepting the child's experience, right? Number three, they're holding that boundary. They're holding the behavioral boundary. So if you choose not to do your homework, because you can't make them do it, right?
Right.
But if you choose not to do your homework, that's your choice. You won't get tech time tonight, and you probably will have a consequence from your teacher tomorrow. So you decide. So we're letting them have that real, we can't make them, we don't want to use the like, you have to, you need to, you should language, because we all know there's kids who are like, I don't have to, I don't need to, right? They're going to go through power struggle. So we want to use the choice-based language. Like it's, if you choose not to do it, you know, you won't get your privileges and you'll probably be held accountable and you'll probably get behind in school, and that's your choice.
Right.
You can actually choose that, right? Let's face it. You know, hopefully not forever. Maybe
they yes, but they probably will test the boundaries and choose it a couple of times. But that's how they figure out how to make better choices.
Right. The problem is a lot of homes, kids choose not to do their homework and they still get their tech time. Right. They still, you know,
yes.
There's no boundary held. So I think this only works if we're really holding children accountable. And then the fourth one is valuing struggle. And I really like what you said is you may be uncomfortable. What if we flip that around, that if it's safe struggle, like I said before, we let kids, struggle's good. We want kids to struggle. That's where you discover, you know, your grit, you know, your resilience, you become adaptable, you learn to problem solve, right? This is what we want kids to do. A lot of parents want their kids' life to be easy and smooth, and that's just not realistic, and no one builds skills. And matures when life is easy and smooth. And so I think that we need to value struggle. So just to recap, we need to be in your parental authority. You need to have the emotional attunement. You need to hold the behavioral boundary. And then the fourth one is valuing struggle.
Right.
So if you have these four, you know, principles, you know, you can hold that container and let your kids struggle and also be a safe parent. And be in your parental authority and give your child choices. Okay. You can't do this if you're dysregulated yourself. So a lot of times when kids get dysregulated, right, they escalate, triggers mom or dad to escalate. And in that situation, I would just say, walk away, go to the bathroom, take a break upstairs, or go do an errand or whatever you need to do to become regulated yourself.
Right. Right? For the parent to get regulated, because it doesn't help. Yeah.
There's no way we can do effective, do this parallel process stuff if you're triggered. you know, and then you can come to your child and hold these safe boundaries. And what I find is that it works because kids, everything's being addressed, their emotions being attended to, their behaviors being attended to, the parents providing a safe container, which the child is, you know, we all know kids try to push, push, push. And if you're like, nope, that's safe, right? It's safe.
Right.
I'll hold you accountable. It doesn't matter if they're 25, you can hold a boundary. You know, maybe they're adults, but if they're still financially dependent on you, you can still state what your boundary is as a parent who's, you know, supporting right. your child. So, you know, we can still hold these boundaries. So I think that, yes. So you're sort of asking like, how do we navigate? What do we say? And obviously every child's different in these situations, but we can't be afraid of them melting down or getting dysregulated. You know, a lot of parents live on eggshells, as you know, yes. they're like, oh, I just want to keep the peace, Chrissy, or I just, you know, I don't want to set them off. Or so guess what the child's learning? Oh, I have power and control in the home through my anger.
Right.
Right. Everyone tiptoes around me because I might blow. So kids are actually getting something out of their anger. We're actually reinforcing their anger problem or their emotional dysregulation problem. But if we say, sweetie, you know, no, you can't, you didn't do your math, you can't get your tech, and they blow, and you say, it's okay to be mad. It's okay to feel your feelings. It's not okay to, you know, disrespect me or call me a bad word. You know, if you call me a bad word, I will, you know, I'll be have to hold you accountable for that. But we do it in a safe way. So we let them know they're making choices.
Right. And I think you're also, what I'm hearing you say too, is sometimes you do have to walk away. And sometimes you have to just let them fail, which I think I'm thinking with a lot of people I know, that part is, it's like keeping up with like the pace of life, which is for kids is their school life primarily, right? It can be overwhelming for these kids, I think, to keep up all the time with how like a regular classroom is moving and how school expectations are set up. And so it's kind of this balance of trying to figure out, right? Like, where are you going to let the kid? I think parents get in the trap because the pace is so fast and not every kid who struggles is able to keep up with that pace. So you end up like getting in, you become enmeshed because it's like, I got to get my kid through school. Right. And so that dance becomes interesting.
Seeing the issue rather than all the games that are played out every day. And that's where I really see kids utilize their therapy more. So therapy isn't just another game playing, which we know happens as well. They go to therapy and they can just tell their therapist whatever they want. It's not
and avoid their emotions, right?
Not necessarily productive. Right. So sometimes parents hold these boundaries and it stirs the pot in the home. Kids, I've heard, tell their therapist like, you know, I'm really pissed off because my parents are holding the rules, you know, and so there's a little more sharing and vulnerability. And so I think that, I think it's, you know, this is what I do. I think it's, let's change the patterns today rather than kick the can down the road. And trust me, I've seen parents get their kids through high school by standing over them every night, and they go to college and they fail.
Yeah, they don't make it. Well, and I like too how you suggest using the phone and probably game time as currency to help motivate the child and also to keep them from getting distracted from their responsibilities. I think that's another hard one, that parents have a hard time of taking ownership of those devices.
And it is, and I will say with a lot of compassion, it is really hard today because, as you know, they could be doing homework and on other things because the homework is on
The computer. Yeah.
So it is, it's not as clean as I'm saying, but I think there are good, you know, parental controls. There are, you know, you can navigate it if you really dig into it, and you can have them do their homework on their Chromebook or something, which doesn't have any other apps, or, you know, there are ways to navigate it.
Yes.
But I do boundaries are very important. And I guess I would say, I don't think we're doing it to motivate them. That's one thing I would really caution. I don't think we're doing the boundary to change the child's behavior, because some parents say to me, Chrissy, I took everything away and my child's behavior didn't change. So we have to be careful that we're not holding a boundary to change their behavior. We're holding a boundary to just hold them accountable, just like sort of getting a speeding ticket, right? Does getting a speeding ticket change your behavior? Or does a speeding ticket just say you went too fast, right? So it's just saying you didn't do your homework, so you don't get it. Whether it changes the kid or not is secondary.
Unless you get sent to traffic school.
Right.
And if you have to pay the bill, it is a motivation to like, be like, okay, I don't want to do this too often.
It does help, but I'm saying we're not doing it to change the child, because then you're in a power struggle. Because then you can say, I'm trying to change them and they didn't change. Do you see you're in the power struggle?
Yeah.
To be in your parental authority to hold safe boundaries in the home, just like maybe a police person's upholding the safe boundaries of the road, and you're saying, hey, you didn't do it, so you lost this privilege. Whether they change or not is secondary. I think we want to just say, it's just not okay to blow off homework and be on tech all night.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? It's just like holding some integrity and
building some skills and some responsibility. Yeah, I get that. Okay. Yeah. So another part in your book that I did like is you talk about the importance of building self-esteem in your child in way, which is to talk to us about like why it is important to build yourself, your child's self-esteem in ways that might work for them that tend to maybe be outside of a school environment. I think for these kids, they're going to build their self-esteem. It's probably going to happen outside of school unless they're really smart and they love science or math and they can take pride in a particular subject in the classroom. But for a lot of these kids, I think it's hard to go into just a normal school environment and feel like they're thriving. And you touch on how building self-esteem can, you know, could be a critical piece to that.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of parents, again, when they have a child struggle, they lower the bar, right? They want to make it easy. They want them to be smooth. But again, can you build self? How do you feel good about yourself if your parent's lowering the bar all the time? And I'm not even talking about school. It could be doing the dishes.
Right.
A lot of parents just like, oh, whatever, you know, like get through the night, you know? I'll just give a little story about ADHD. This one family I worked with, the mother was really type A and the daughter had to do the dishes for her chore. And it just triggered her like mad. And the mom's like, what do you mean? It's not a big deal. You just do, you know, right. And the daughter was working with her coach, and the daughter was very sequential. And so they mapped it out. And, you know, step one was like, make a bowl of hot soapy water. That's kind of easy. Step two, dip the plate in it. That's actually kind of fun. Step three, put it in the dishwasher. So it was like when she did it sequentially and broke it down, it wasn't overwhelming. And so that at the end of the night, she felt good about herself. She cleaned up the kitchen when her mom had to go do something. This was like a single mom, single daughter.
Yeah, that's huge.
Saying like kids can build self-esteem on little things. Like helping a parent with a chore, or I think hobbies or other interests or out of school, like extracurriculars. If it's not the traditional academics or maybe a traditional, sometimes kids with ADHD do well in sports, but sometimes they don't. So finding those interests, but just not lowering the bar, asking them to follow through, to find their sequencing and their method. So they have a completion, right? Having those completions is so important. And so often with kids, they have an incompletion, like the parent comes in and rescues and fixes and changes.
Right.
What does that do for our kids' self-esteem?
Right.
You know? And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, that's good. That's what I was looking for. That's kind of the.
And kids, face, you know, and sometimes they fail and that's okay too. But then when they get it, you know, my background, I think, you know, I write about in the book is wilderness therapy. And, you know, we ask kids to make a primitive fire out of sticks, or, you know, like that's really hard, and to hike, you know, 10 miles with a backpack or whatever. And all these things are really hard. But guess what? When a kid does it, it's like the fire, or like the light in their eyes, and they're on top of the world, and they feel like a leader, and then they want to teach it to somebody else. And it's like, oh my God, that's self-esteem, that's self-mastery. And we would literally see it happen in front of ours. And that fire, they didn't get the first time, the second time, the third time, right? They gave up, they got angry. And we just said, okay, you know, when you'll get it when you get it. We were patient. We didn't rescue. You know, we provided support. Okay, let's try the fire again. But right. The child knew it. And when they did it, it was like this burst of esteem. And so I think that, you know, whatever it is, we can't lower the bar. We have to, we have to see kids as capable, right?
Right. And build, yeah. And make them responsible. And I love how with washing the dishes, you said, it just took maybe breaking it down into steps so that the girl was able to, like, cause sometimes we take that for granted too, that they ought to, like, a person who doesn't struggle with executive functioning just kind of figures it out, takes it for granted, right? And these kids need sometimes to break things down to help them do those things. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say they need to figure out their way, like, because the type A parent knows, but the child with ADD needs to figure out what's their organizational pattern. And sometimes you might need a coach, you know, or someone, you know, like a specialist to help them with that or not, or a therapist, but, you know, they need to figure out what, so, you know, homework can be overwhelming, but if it's like really broken down into steps and it's sequential and it's like, you know, it's not that hard. It doesn't seem to be that hard. So
right. They can do it. They can do it. Okay. So you worked in a wilderness program. So I know parents have a question. I know parents get frustrated with some of their kids, usually in that preteen to teenage age. And they think about sending them to a wilderness program because things in the house, like usually the teen is pressing things, right? Becoming rebellious, testing the rules, being more emotional because of hormones. And I think it gets to that point of like, when do I consider wilderness and will my child benefit from that?
Yeah, I'm a huge advocate for wilderness. I think there's so much learning that happens on so many levels because you have the child there, right? It's not like office therapy where you're once a week, you know, you have them, you know, residential, you know,
right.
There's so many ways to work with kids because we're asking them to do things and then their patterns come out. Like I said, just with like them making the fire, and then we see their patterns, and then you can talk about their limiting beliefs or their maladaptive patterns or how they shut down or how they get dysregulated, and all this stuff comes out. So it's a really rich environment to work with kids, you know, in a wilderness setting and have that therapeutic approach, which I think is hard to do in other settings. But yeah, when do you need it? I think you need it really when you've crossed a threshold in your home where the home is just not workable. I don't think parents send their kids to wilderness lightly. You know, sometimes I say it's sort of like you have to turn over every stone in the home, meaning like maybe you tried home therapy in the home, maybe you did a IOP program, maybe you know, whatever it is, you had a coach, maybe you had a home contract, like sort of like parents have sort of tried everything and the child is still struggling. What I mean, like across the board, maybe they're struggling in the home relationships, they're struggling socially, maybe they're struggling academically, maybe they're struggling with substance use or self-harm or something more, you know, perhaps safety issues. But yeah. when the point where it's just, there's no real success in the home, right? There's no more area for self-esteem development. And so I think if you keep a child at home, you're just, you know, we need to think about the brain is developing till what, 23, 25. So if you have a child stalled out for a year or two in their teen years, you're setting patterns in, right? The brain is like a sponge. And that's the way you want to think about it. Even if your child's say smoking pot and you're like, oh, it's not a big deal. Well, if they're doing it from 14 to 16, that's setting pretty strong habits, right? Of avoiding emotions, numbing out, disconnecting, which is really common with ADHD, right? To numb out, right? Because they're overstimulated.
Right.
They're overwhelmed a lot. They're struggling socially, academically. So I'm just using that as one example. It could be addicted to tech. They could be, you know, there could be various ways they're struggling. And I think parents have to, you know, see if you're not on any kind of growth trajectory where you're solving the problem at home and it's just plateauing or getting worse, you know, it may be something to think about because, you know, you want your child's brain healthy, right? You want your child's healthy environment where they're actually building skills during this massive brain development time and learning resiliency and regulation and adaptability and flexibility, not like rigidity and control and shutting down and all these things that we
right.
So I think that, you know, that's something I would ask myself as a parent, you know, and I do think wilderness is a major intervention in a positive. I think the question then is integration, like coming back home, you know, is tough. And how do we bring the changes home, you know? And so home is different. So when the child does come back home, you're back on a, hopefully a growth trajectory again, and a path that is helping.
Right. And the parent needs to be a part of that trajectory again as well too, right?
Yeah. And that's where that enmeshment comes in, right? If they're stuck in patterns of fixing and rescuing and enmeshed with their child and their child goes to wilderness and you do this huge investment emotionally, financially, and the child comes home and the parent rescues again, you're just unraveling it, right? You're unraveling the progress because no one rescued the child in wilderness, right? The child had to figure it out. The child had to dig deep. The child had to become adaptable, you know, and then if the child comes home and any little discomfort, a parent intervenes, right? You're just sort of undermining the process. So yeah, I think there's a lot of things to consider. Is the parent really ready, you know, to make the changes? So it's not just, oh, let's send the child away to be fixed, right? It's a whole system needs to be shifted. And I don't blame anyone. You know, I'm not blaming the parent, I'm not blaming the child. I think there are patterns that develop over time. Like, just like I told you, that parent that was four, or the child was four, that was tying their shoes, you know, while they were on their Game Boy, right? Like, these develop over time, you know? And, you know, some families maybe navigated okay, and some families get stuck and need to do these interventions.
Okay. So tell me, as we wrap it up here, Chrissy, what programs do you offer? If parents are seeking support and looking for different resources to help them when their child is struggling, and the parent may be struggling too, right? They're in this place where they're looking for help, which always seems to be the case. So tell us how you can help.
Absolutely. So I think you mentioned my book, The Parallel Process, and I did create a parallel process intensive e-course that's called Transform Your Parenting. It's like a month long intensive, but you have lifetime access to the class, so you can do it however long you can do it at a slower pace. But the idea is it's helping parents rewrite the script. It's helping parents learn the new language so they can follow these four principles that I said, where they're in their authority and they're emotionally attuned, they're holding boundaries, and they're letting their child struggle. And this, in my mind, helps the child learn to self-regulate and develop what I call these internal resources. And this is, you know, whether you have a child in treatment at home or your child went to a program, at any point you can integrate all of these concepts into your parenting. And then I have, because a lot of parents read The Parallel Process and said, oh, I wish I had this 15 years ago, because as you know, learning to respond to children's emotions when they're young is really important, and not develop the unhealthy patterns.
Right.
So I wrote the book Brave Parenting, and that's just general resiliency and raising your kids for emotional health, right? To be emotionally healthy, resilient. And that's called Brave Parenting. And I also have an e-course on that to help parents into those skills. And then I also just have a group coaching class. So that's like a monthly subscription. You can come on live and ask me questions.
Oh, great.
it's twice a month is the class, but there's a library of like over 60 classes you can listen to on all different topics. So it just gives parents kind of a community and a safe environment. If say they do my e-course and they're like, oh, well, I want to ask my question specific to my child, you could come on the group class and ask those.
That's great.
Have that like added layer of support. And because, you know, it's like learning French, right? You might know the vocabulary, but you don't know how to speak it yet. Right. You know, like a lot of parents, you know, read my book and they're like, oh, I get the vocabulary, but they don't know how to speak it yet. They don't know how to show up differently with their child because these kids are tough, right? This is not easy. These kids are relentless. They are powerful, right?
They're powerful. They're good kids, but it's tough.
That they have their, you know, and the thing is, you know, we might say manipulation, words like that, or we might say they power struggle, but a lot of it is that they're just learning to get their needs met. They learn their needs met through these unhealthy ways, and it worked. So we can't blame them, right? The parents let it work. So now we have to say, you know what? It's not going to work anymore. You're escalating your emotions. It's just not going to work anymore. And this is sort of helping parents, you know, do these sort of interventions in the home and shift the patterns and dynamics so they can step back into their parental authority and hold that safe container.
Yeah. I think that's great. And that's great that you're so accessible too. I think for a lot of parents too, it's just, you just can't believe that any other child is acting this way. And the reality is it's kind of typical for an ADHD kid.
Absolutely. And you are absolutely not alone. And with ADHD, I think there's multiple aspects to it, right? Because it's not just school, it's social and anxiety. There's a lot of high level of anxiety associated with it. Kids that are very much feelers, so they get easily overwhelmed and dysregulated and overstimulated. And so it's multi-layered and it's complicated. And yeah, no, you're not alone. And a lot of, you know, families have a child that's running the house. And this, you know, it's not safe for the other kids at times. And this is where it's really important to bring in these parenting practices so you feel like you're, you know, you have a path forward as a family.
Yes. Yes. Good. Well, you make it sound hopeful, Chrissy. It is hopeful. And you're a wonderful resource. So I appreciate all your time today. This was really great. And anybody listening, if you want additional resources, please reach out to her.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's hopeful because, and the other last thing I'll say is because it's our work too, right? I mean, these kids push our buttons, right?
Right.
They do it for us and they find those things that we just never dealt with, right? Where we feel insecure or we have low confidence or we're afraid of our child feeling this and that because we don't want to feel that in ourselves. So in a way, you know, yes, it's very hard, but it also gives parents an opportunity to do a deeper level of growth that maybe they wouldn't have done with. You know, sometimes I say, maybe you don't want to grow even in your marriage, or you don't want to grow with your boss or your coworker, but you want to grow from your kid, right? Most all of us want to be the best parent we can be. And so,
absolutely. Well, and it's, you know, the biggest fear, you don't want them to go to jail. And you want them to grow up and, you know, find love and find a job and be independent.
Absolutely. And maybe have something we didn't have, right? Like a greater or whatever it is, you know, we want our children to exceed us. And I think that, you know, so I do think parents, there is an opening to do that deeper work that maybe they didn't feel like they needed to do at any point in their life until now. And I see that. And so as hard as it is, you know, this child is saying, nope, I'm not going to let dad use his anger every night. I'm not going to let my mom do an anxiety spiral every day because, you know, they're going to poke at it. They're going to keep poking at it and keep poking at it, and keep poking at it till you learn to look at that issue. Right.
So the child's challenging the parent too to develop.
Yeah, because the child's looking for safety.
Yeah.
Safe environment. And if dad blows or mom gets anxious or whatever they do, the child's going to keep pushing on that. That's why they push buttons. They're not doing it to be bad kids. They're doing it because they want safety. And when dad like checks out or drinks too much or whatever the ish family dynamics are, the child feels unsafe.
Yeah.
And so the child's going to keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. And we can say, oh, my child drives me crazy. And it's like, no. Your child's pushing a button that you haven't fully healed.
Right.
Right. Seeing your blind spot that you don't want to look at.
Right.
No. So it is an opportunity to do this deeper work and grow yourself. And if parents do the parallel process, they're going to come out the other end with more capacity, with more skills in themselves.
Right. Right.
Oh,
good. Thank you, Chrissy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This was great.